Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome aboard. It is the Amy Beth Arkwee Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. We made it to Friday. Wow. Kind of crawled across the finish line this week in some cases, right? It works that way sometimes with our 401k, hoping it's not going to dump into the deep fryer along with Paula Deen's career. Who knew the queen of mean southern cuisine was really mean? We'll talk about that later, along with our free flow pop culture convo. Still sad about the reeling from the death, the sudden death of James Gandolfini, a big TV icon, big-hearted star. And I'm going to clue you in on a performance that I doubt you've seen that really captures him in a new light and tell you how you can see it. That's all coming up a bit later. We'll do our creative journal jumpers. Hey, summer is here officially, too. We'll do a little summer send-up, courtesy of my team at TCS. That's all coming up. We'll get you in the mix. If you're listening live, please join us at 347-857-4505. But we need some humor this week, that's for sure. And I think we found the man for the job. Davis Ojordwe is the man behind the nun like none other, Sister Mary Olga Fortitude. It's a series of satirical spiritual books that kind of highlight the healing power of humor. And I'm really happy to have you, Davis. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. Now, listen, we've got to talk about this. She certainly is a nun like none other. Sister Mary Olga Fortitude, she has she swigs her bourbon, she smokes her Marlboros, but she has a big heart. Tell me a little bit about, you have a couple of books already out and a bunch more coming. The first one was The Misadventures of Sister Mary Olga Fortitude. The second one is Bathed in Bucksnort. Tell me about her. Where did she come from?
Well, she's a product of my imagination, of course. The way I developed her was I had a coworker when I was working for Adult Protective Services who I used to like to entertain. And one day on a whim, I just called her up and left a voicemail for her. And I did an impression of this character, Sister Mary Olga Fortitude. And the next day at work, she's listening to her voicemail. And mind you, we worked with the mentally ill. So she gets to my voicemail, and she's giving me this strange look. And then all of a sudden, she bursts out in laughter. She figured out it was me. And that's how Sister Mary Olga was born. And then one by one, I developed other characters in the series, and I would do the same thing. And she just loved it. She fell in love with the characters. And after I retired, I thought to my...
Pardon me? What was the message you left? You sort of dropped the punchline. What was the message that you left this woman?
Oh, no, I'm just saying that what I did was I created impressions of the characters. And I couldn't tell you the exact message, but I was spinning tales. Sister Mary Olga Fortitude would always tell these stories. And so the voicemail messages I would leave for her would be little abbreviated stories told by the nun, and I would impersonate the nun. And essentially, that's what The Misadventures of Sister Mary Olga Fortitude is. It's a collection of stories of these wacky characters in the fictional town of Bucksnort, Wisconsin, where she's got a reverend mother that's a reformed prostitute, there's a convent chef that's a gay cowboy, and all the characters are zany, over the top, and the scenarios are wacky and designed to make people lighten up and not take life so seriously.
And the healing power of humor is definitely... So give us some of the misadventures. Can you give us a little nutshell of some of the things that she encounters or goes through?
Well, one of the things that happens to her when she ties one on is that she's in the convent's bathroom and she passes out after drinking a half gallon of Jack Daniels. And the next morning she wakes up with quite a headache as she hears the sound of the door swinging open. And at first... she's concerned that it's a Reverend Mother, but it's actually the convent's new nun, Sister Samantha Monet, who is singing Amazing Grace, and she walks into the cubicle adjacent to Sister Mary Olga Fortitude. Unfortunately for Sister Mary Olga, her head has, her body's fallen off her toilet, and her head is now underneath the cubicle that Sister Monet is, Sister Samantha is entering. And Sister Mary Olga closes her eyes in reverence as Sister Samantha sits down over her head and lowers her panties. And as she does so, Sister Mary Olga opens her eyes and gets an eyeful and says, "Oh boy," because Sister Samantha is not a girl. So that's an example of how crazy the stories can get. Yeah.
I see. Okay, we're going interesting territory. Now, you also have a higher calling on this, which I do think is to let people lighten up. But also, as you said, your background is very interesting. You've worked in social work. You worked with the mentally ill for many years. How do you apply that to your work here? I mean, it's not just about laughing. It's also about a healing sense, right? About making people feel more included and
embrace
diversity and that kind of thing, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I worked with a very disenfranchised population of people and learned to have compassion for people that were different from myself, who society might judge as less than others. And so I've incorporated not necessarily similar folks into the books, but some of the people that society might look down on, like gays and lesbians, and I happen to be gay myself, so there's no disparagement intended there, but there is a character in the second book who has a mission against gay people. Actually, there's a couple of characters, but this one character is called the Reverend Billy Bob Blunthead, and he has a ministry called the Born Again or Burn Forever Disciples for Jesus, excuse me. And he's out on a mission to persecute gay people, and he's there's this town busybody who has brought him to the scene. Her name is Priscilla Bunhead, and she wears her hair in a tight little bun, and I maintain that it's so tight that she can't think for herself. I guess in a roundabout manner, what I'm trying to get at is that these books do try to embrace the wonderful diversity of life and of different people. And even though they are social and religious satires, they do have a spiritual message. And that, I mean, the main message would be the golden rule, and that is, you know, to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And some of these characters certainly don't do that, but they point out how important it is for us, if we're going to enjoy our lives and going to be at peace with other people, how important it is to do just that.
I mean, it's very important. You know, you think like a very simple but profound and very important message. And certainly society, on the one hand, we become more accepting, but as you know, I'm sure you know this, as we make progress, there's always an underbelly of things that come up, the negative end of it, where people who feel threatened by more tolerance or acceptance, whether it be for women or gay people, particularly now when you see more acceptance of gay marriage, you also see the undercurrent or racism and those kinds of things that always seem to percolate. After President Obama was elected, you saw that undercurrent, the underbelly of racism that sort of resurfaced. So you do have to guard against that. And there's an upper incidence in New York, for example, of hate crimes against gays. There was a big uptick in that recently. And, you know, you have to start thinking that progress is like growing pains. So I think it's really important to put out those positive messages. And you did talk, it's interesting when you said, you know, your work allowed you, as well as your life experience, to be more compassionate. I always think it would be great if politicians would be required to be involved in social work or something before they got into
it. I think that would be an excellent idea. Yeah.
You know, because they're so removed from who they're really trying to supposedly representing.
Yeah.
Look at that. Yeah. You know, it's true. You know, if you take a look at the whole sequester, I mean, they haven't done a darn thing, and they keep getting their paychecks. I don't get it.
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah,
I digress.
You're right. You've got a good point.
Talk to me about your influences. Do you have any literary influences that inspired you in terms of, you know?
I'm sorry, what kind of influences?
Other writers, that literary influences that inspired your
work? Oh, yes. I'll tell you, some of the writers that have most influenced me and my writing style would be Armistead Maupin, who wrote the Tales of the City series, and Carl Hiaasen, who has really wacky characters like mine. I think that those two writers, more than anybody else, have inspired me. And also Garrison Keillor to a lesser extent, because my first book is similar to his books in that it's largely a narrative, but the sequel and the other books that will be coming out in the series are not narratives. They're dialogues with the characters interacting with each other. And So I certainly appreciate the legacy of some of these authors and how they have inspired me.
Yeah, that's great. What is your writing process like? I mean, you mentioned you retired from working in social services, so do you have your full day surrounded by writing? Is that pretty much your full-time occupation?
Pretty much. When I'm in a place of inspiration, I'll meditate. Well, I meditate first thing in the morning. And then I'll sit down and write, and I can write for 8 or 10 hours in a day. The Misadventures of Sister Mary Alga Fortitude I wrote in about 6 weeks. It's a short book, but when I get going on a project, as long as I stay in a place of inspiration, which is usually the case, I just crank them out. I've written.
No wonder you have so many books coming. You said you have a whole bunch in the series already, so I can see how that happened.
Yes,
you're writing 8 to 10 hours a day. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, no, I write about 3 books a year on average.
Oh, that's pretty impressive. And what has the response been from readers?
The response on Amazon's been great. I've gotten mostly 5 out of 5 star reviews, and that's probably the best place for anybody that's interested in the books to go look for them, or BarnesandNoble.com, but Amazon.com is a great place to go to get information on the books. And likewise, people can look at my blog, Best Satire Series of the Decade, .blogspot.com. I know that's more than a mouthful, but that will give you a lot of background on the series. I have all kinds of articles, and it has a link to my author blog, which talks a lot more about my background and has all kinds of articles related to that.
How about some of your colleagues? Have your colleagues, your former colleagues, read the book? And like you mentioned, that woman that you actually started it for initially, did she read it? Other people read it?
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I have so many of my colleagues have read the books and can't believe that I had it in me. And I find it hard to believe, too, because I never thought I would have been a writer. In fact, when I was in college, my freshman English teacher told me that my writing was too complicated, even though I got good marks in English. I kind of gave up and did a disservice to myself by not taking any more courses, and I would have loved to have taken writing courses. But when I got to be a social worker, I had to make my case notes clear and concise, so I think that really helped me develop my writing skills so that they would be much more accessible to readers and much more enjoyable, and I think that's why I'm enjoying such good ratings on Amazon.
Well, good for you for going back to it, because there's really nothing... no one can hurt you or help you as much as a teacher. You know, people don't realize this, but a teacher making a positive comment to a student or a negative comment to a student, on the other hand, can really either motivate a person in one direction or other. You know, so
one
teacher kind of put the kibosh on something which might have been something you could have come to earlier. But it's never too late, because, you know, I work with writers and all kinds of people who are looking to find their voices, change careers sometimes, that kind of thing, as a creativity coach and counselor. And, you know, a lot of people really have been beaten down by the education system, and they come to middle life, and they say, hey, I'm not doing what I really want to do. And there are you know, there's never, it's never too late. If you're still here, you can embrace it. But, you know, why not do it early? So, you know, I always give a lot of credit to, I had one English teacher in high school who was very encouraging early on. And I was very fortunate to have the right teachers at the right time. By the time I got to graduate school, I had a teacher, a professor, who said to me, there's literature with a capital L and literature with a capital M. And this is an MFA program, so of course they were promoting capital L, meaning literature.
Right.
And capital M was money. And she said, you're writing the latter. And I took that at the time as like a slam. But you know what? It's encouraging. I'm waiting for the money to come in. But
there you go. Right. So am I.
Exactly. But, you know, so I don't think you should put the kibosh on people's voices and attempts. And I think had I been, well, actually, it did hurt me for a while. But I had a lot to fall back on because I had other, I was resilient enough and I had other people who were encouraging or had been encouraging up till then. So teachers sometimes get a bad rap or a good rap, depending. And they really, but they really can influence young people. So,
absolutely.
But I'm glad you,
you
came back to it, which is really exciting and good. What do you, now, who besides that, obviously you have an affinity for Sister Mary Olga, but who else? And I did read a little ahead that you're going to reveal something about her. She's finally going to come to grips with some of her demons in the third book. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. She goes away to Holy Happenings Rehab, and she joins Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have another character. The gay cowboy is a self-described sex maniac, and he ends up getting into a 12-step program called Sex Maniacs Notorious. And even though I give the 12-step program a funny name, it you know, I treat that addiction in earnest because that is a serious addiction that affects a lot of people, especially gay, young gay men these days. And I'm a recovering sex addict, so I have a lot of compassion for people with that particular problem. So, you know, I bring in some of these facets of my life. I'm also a recovering alcoholic, so I can certainly relate to Sister Mary Olga Fortitude. But what I end up doing after several of the books is I go backwards in time so that I can keep her in some of her predicaments with her alcohol.
She won't be as fun when she sobers up. Is that what you mean?
She'll be fun. She'll be fun. But I get some more outrageous scenarios going backwards in time too, before she gets sober.
What? Who are you saying? You mentioned the gay cowboy. Are there other characters that you particularly have an affinity for, or particularly enjoy writing about?
Well, I like the nasty characters. Priscilla Bunhead is she's just evil, and
was she modeled after anybody?
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, she was, but I'm not going to say who. And she's got a partner in crime named Lily Liver Snatch a Snitch, and she's also modeled after somebody. And the two of them basically are always on a witch hunt against people that are different than themselves. So I like those characters a lot. I have a lot of fun with them. I even bring in to the next book somebody that gives Priscilla a taste of her own medicine, and that's her aunt, who comes to live with her. Priscilla's supposedly taking care of her, but the aunt gives her a dose of her own medicine. So,
when villains collide, I like that. It's fun.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, do you have any, now this series, you obviously have a lot of books in the offing. Do you ever think you're going to do something else, like a different series altogether or a different book altogether?
Yes, I actually have worked on a different series, and I just signed a contract for a book called Shades of Gay, which is a little takeoff on the 50 Shades of Grey. And as I discovered after I had signed the contract, there already are a couple of books out there entitled Shades of Gay, but this one is it's a very erotic book. And it is a story of a recovering alcoholic and a recovering sex addict. So I think that, to me, it's going to be a book that's going to hook people who are looking for something erotic and maybe we'll wake them up to the fact that they might have a problem for which they can seek some help. So, and I've written that under... Go ahead.
Is that going to be humorous or also more serious?
Oh, it's more serious. It's a love story. It does have humor in it, though. It is more of a drama, and it goes backwards and forwards in time, tracing the evolution of a relationship between two characters, the two main characters, and also shows the progression of the disease of alcoholism and sexual addiction in the main character, whose name is Daniel. And the book is written under a pseudonym, David Clark, and it's going to be published by Lethe Press sometime this summer.
Oh, wow. Good for you.
Yeah,
you've got a lot going
on. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I've got some other things out there in the works, too, but nothing else that's going to be published in the near future. But hopefully I'll be able to bring some of the other books in the Sister Mary Olga series out, because I know that people, when they've read them, have said, you know, they can't wait for the next one. So I've got to get the third one out, which is called Have a Heart.
That's always the best when people can't wait to read the next one. That's the motivation.
Oh, absolutely. No question about it.
That is the best. But, yeah, it sounds fascinating. You have an interesting, obviously, background, but also great discipline, because if you're writing 8 to 10 hours a day, do you start early in the morning and then just keep going? And then you're really locked in, basically, into your process.
I do. It's not to say that I do that every day, but usually when I am writing a book, I apply myself with that kind of diligence. And, you know, there are times when I become blocked and I just need to take some time out. Sometimes I go right from one book to the next, and sometimes I take a break for myself. And now I'm not working on a project, but I'm planning on writing a sequel to Shades of Gay. I've written the prequel to the book, so that's going to be a trilogy.
Interesting. All right. Now, are you someone who outlines your work, or do you just let it flow as it goes organically?
No.
What's your process as far as that goes?
No, my process is to let it flow. And I do get ideas about how the story is going to evolve as I'm writing, but I like to let the story tell itself rather than to outline it.
Right. And obviously, that process has worked for you, clearly. You've been very productive and prolific. It's quite an amazing output over a period of not too many years, right? You've been doing this for a few years,
right,
but not them.
That's pretty
impressive. So really, I hope you good luck with the new project, and maybe when that comes out, you'll come back and talk to us about more depth, Shades of Gay, under a different name. But today it's Sister Mary Olga Fortitude and Her Misadventures. Babes and Bucksnort is the second book. The third one you said, what is it? Have a Heart.
Have a Heart. Yep.
Have a Heart, and that one. When do you expect that one out? Or you don't know yet?
Hopefully in the next year.
Next year. Okay, great.
Yeah.
All right, Davis Aujourd'hui, a pleasure talking with you. You've created an interesting collection of characters, that's for sure, and obviously you already have a cadre of fans. I hope your fan base increases. You obviously have besides the humor, you also have a very important message to impart, which I think we need to hear more of. So I do appreciate you sharing that with us, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much, Amy. I really appreciate the opportunity to be present on your show.
Thank you. Find out more about the books at Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com, and let me see if I can pull this off. The Best Satire Series .blogspot.com. Yes?
Best Satire Series of the Decade
.blogspot.com.
Yep.
I forgot the of the decade. Sorry. Okay. Thank you, Davis. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming by.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, there you go. See, the website is too long, but you'll find him. Look him up on Google. You'll find him. It is the Amy Metharkley Show. Hey, if you want in, 347-857-4505 gets you in the next. Our Free Flow Pop Culture Convo comes up, and we'll also do our little summer send-up. That's next. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Mr. Clean gets rid of dirt and grime and grease in just a minute.
Mr. Clean will clean your whole house and everything that's in it.
Floors, doors, walls, halls, white sidewalls, tires, and old golf balls.
Sink, stoves, bathtubs, he'll do. He'll even help clean laundry, too.
Mr. Clean gets rid of dirt and grime and grease in just a minute.
Mr. Clean will clean your whole house and everything that's in it.
Can he clean a kitchen sink?
Quicker than a wink.
Can he clean a window sash?
Faster than a flash.
Can he clean a dirty mirror?
He'll make it bright and clearer.
Can he clean a diamond ring?
Mr. Clean cleans anything.
Mr. Clean gets rid of dirt and grime and grease in just a minute. Mr. Clean will clean your whole house and everything that's in it. Mr. Clean, Mr. Clean, Mr. Clean.
It is the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. Welcome back here on VTR. 347-857-4505 is your ticket to the show and our free flow pop culture convo coming up. Also, our creative journal Jumpstarter. Yeah, I've got one for you. It's a seasonal one. Speaking of the season, Trudy, Aurora, and the team from TCS put together our little musical collection in honor of summer. And this one, we'll start off with one I'm sending especially out to the Fuse, my nephews, Josh and Noah, getting ready for camp next week. Would it kill you to write home?
Hello, mother. Hello, father. Here I am at Camp Granada. Camp is very entertaining. And they say we'll have some fun if it stops raining. I went hiking with Joe Spivey. He developed poison ivy. You remember Leonard Skinner. He got ptomaine poisoning last night after dinner. All the counselors hate the waiters. And the lake has alligators. And the head coach wants no sissy. So he reads to us from something called Ulysses. Now I don't want this should scare you, but my bunkmate has malaria. You remember Jeffrey Hardy. They're about to organize a searching party. Fada, take me home. I hate Granada, don't leave me out in the forest where I might get eaten by a bear. Take me home. I promise I will not make noise or mess the house with other boys. Oh, please don't make me stay. I've been here one whole day. Dearest Fada, darling Mada, how's my precious little brother? Let me come home if you miss me. I would even let Aunt Bertha hug and kiss me. Wait a minute, it stopped hailing. Guys are swimming, guys are sailing. Playing baseball, gee, that's better. Mata Fata, kindly disregard this letter.
She was afraid to come out of the locker. She was as nervous as she could be. Afraid to come out in the open, and so a blanket. afraid to come out of the water, and I wonder what she's gonna do. Now she's afraid to come out of the water, and the poor little girl's turning blue.
1, 2, 3, 4, tell the people what she wore.
It was an itsy bitsy teeny weeny yellow polka dot bikini that she wore for the first time today. An itsy bitsy teeny weeny yellow polka dot bikini, so in the water she wanted to take. From the water to the blanket, from the blanket to the shore, from the shore to the water. Guess there is.
Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Those days of soda and pretzels and beer. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Just stop the sun and moon and sing a song of cheer. Just fill your basket full of sandwiches and wieners. Then lock the house up, now you're set. And on the beach you'll see the girls in their bikinis. As cute as ever, but they never get them wet. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Those days of soda and pretzels and beer. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. You'll wish that summer could always be here.
Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Those days of soda and pretzels and beer. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Just stop the sun and moon and sing a song of cheer.
Don't have to tell a girl and fella about a drive-in or some romantic movie scene. Why, from the moment that those lovers start arriving, you'll see more kissing in the cars and on the screen. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Those days of soda and pretzels and beer. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. You wish that summer could always be here. You wish that summer could always be here. You wish that summer could always be here.
Wait till the mosquitoes eat you up. Hey, where it's Nat King Cole's classic Lazy Hazy Days of Summer, wrapping up our little summer salute on the official first day of summer on the Amy Beth Arkley Show here on BTR. Some fun in there, too, with Brian Hyland's Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini. Last time I wore one of those, I was about 4, and if ever. And, of course, the Alan Sherman classic, Hello Mudda, Hello Fada. Greetings from Camp Granada. A special send-up to my nephews, Josh and Noah, who are heading to camp next week. Don't forget to write your parents and Nana and your Auntie A. Have fun. Indeed. We'll hear all about it when you come home. Hey, speaking of summer, I've got a great journal jump starter for you. As you know, for the journal challengers, people have asked me to give you a prompt like we do in my writing workshop, Playing with Artistic Blocks. So here goes. Try it. Use it. Eschew it for something else. Toss it in the garbage. Do with it what you will. See if it helps you. Are you ready? In honor of the season, it's the smell, the sound, and the feel of summer rain. The smell, the sound, the feel of summer rain. Do with it what you will. And be in touch if you have any creativity questions. Hop over to the website, amybetharkowee.com. A couple of new journal challengers check in. Claudia from Louisville, Kentucky, she says she started, and she'll see. She's guarded, but she's giving it a shot. And Frank also checking in from Brooklyn. Hey, Frank, how's it going? In Brooklyn, don't forget, it's an old-fashioned pen and paper kind of deal. You get yourself an old-fashioned notebook. You write 30 minutes in the morning and or the evening. Just stream of consciousness. See what happens. Just getting in touch with your inner genius, your inner Virginia Woolf, if you will. And a lot of folks have checked in and said it works for them. There are a couple of people who, you know, it wasn't for them, and that's okay, too. So see if it helps you jumpstart your creative life. And keep in touch. If you have any other questions, by all means, we'll be happy to hear about it. Also, stop by the website if you have a story to tell. Always looking for intriguing authors and filmmakers, theater folks, musicians, etc., who have a story to share. And free-thinking, free-wheeling, loquacious pop culture vultures who want to dish TV, movies, the topics in the news for our expanded Coffee Klatch editions. All of that, you can find it at amybetharkowi.com. Hit me up on Twitter at abwrites. Or follow me on the Blog Talk Radio site as well. Just keep following me. I don't need Edward Snowden to tell me they're following me. What is the old expression? Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean people aren't really after you. With social media, you want them after you. Or maybe not. Maybe not. I mean, you know what's going on with Paula Deen, that story, which may or may, you know, again, you have to analyze the story, what's true, what's not true. Apparently, for those who don't know, Paula Deen and her brother Bubba, and boy, does he sound like a doll. I hope he's single because he's just, he sounds delicious. Apparently, he forces people to watch pornography, or he doesn't really force them to watch it, but he has pornography on the computers at his work. They're accused of racist and sexist slurs and practices at their restaurants by a former employee. And during the depositions, Paula did admit to using the N-word rather freely, and her casual response was, yeah, of course. She also admitted that her ideal party would be an antebellum plantation-style wedding with black waiters in white jackets. So it's sort of like antebellum, that's slavery, Paula, which is why I don't understand that country band, which I happen to enjoy, Lady Antebellum. Their name, I think, might rub some people the wrong way. But, you know, we'll see. I know on social media, Facebook yesterday, somebody posted that it's a lynching for this woman, that people are going after her without having the facts, and that she really isn't what they say she is. We'll see how it plays out. Her star was a bit tarnished. I mean, she used to be the biggest star on Food Network. Her star has taken a hit a couple of years ago when she concealed apparently her fact that she was suffering from diabetes until she signed on with a big pharma sponsorship, and then some people were not happy with her. But she seems to have rebounded a bit. Her sons are in the network heavily. Her husband is involved with her product line. Big brand going on, cookbooks and food and the restaurants and the shows. Food Network playing it coy. They haven't pulled the plug yet. She's still a big star with them. But they did issue a statement saying they do not condone any racial slurs, and they're monitoring the situation. In fact, somebody told me they put up some flyers on the Internet to see if people would go to her site for recipes and so forth. So we'll see what happens, how it plays out, if she can backpedal, mea culpa appearance on some talk show. The Oprah couch is empty these days, I guess. Well, she's still on OWN occasionally, but maybe Katie Couric is the place to go now. I don't know, but we'll see what happens. So, yeah, you do want to keep an open mind, that's for sure. But some of the things she said and admitted to in the deposition do not sound good for her or her brother. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. And speaking of social media, I mean, it is true. This is the wild card in so many of these high-profile cases. We certainly saw it in Arias, by the way, the movie, the Lifetime movie. You know you're watching it, Justice Junkies, with me. We know it's going to be lousy. It's on Lifetime this weekend. Same people that did the Casey Anthony movie and the Drew Peterson movie, but we're watching it. And we'll talk about it on Monday. But, you know, there was this big backlash. And, you know, I'm not sitting on some perch from on high. I'm watching it with you. I'm riveted. We're talking about it. We're all in this together. So don't take this the wrong way. But I really don't like some of the reaction that people had towards some of the witnesses and some of the jurors in that case. I mean, first of all, the jury got it right. I don't understand this notion that because they were deadlocked in the penalty phase. The penalty phase, this is a bonus round that nobody wants to go to. It's life or death. It's not like there's any... Her life, she's going to be in prison, because even if she got the death penalty, which is obviously what the family wants and what a lot of people who are out for blood on the Internet want, she's going to be in prison for a very long time before if she ever gets executed. So it's essentially a life in a box. This is not a good life for her. She made an appearance yesterday at that hearing. She's only been locked up 23 hours a day for a couple of weeks, and she already looks like hell. So this is not a good life for this woman. I'm not saying she deserves better, but let's not pretend she's got some great alternative, door number three, going to Cancun with Travis. It doesn't work that way. But the backlash against the jurors, I don't get. Why are you mad at them? They did the best they could, and they did convict her on first-degree murder. Let's remember, they did get it right. And some of the witnesses, not so great, but I wonder how this is going to play out in the Zimmerman case. That has just, they just seated the jury, amazing, six women, five white women, one woman who is described as either black and or Hispanic. I think there are four or five of them are moms. How is this going to play? Do you think it's going to be a pro-defense or pro-prosecution, or does it matter? We're going to tackle this on Monday. Patrick Moore, a crime writer, the founder of the All Crime, All Things Crime blog, will be here. I think his latest post was about this. And I don't think he believes that there's going to be a conviction in second degree. And you know what? I tend to agree, and not necessarily do I think it shouldn't be, but where are the facts? How do they stack up? What can you prove? And what is going to happen if there's an acquittal in this case? I'm afraid this could be a social tinderbox, and we'll talk about all of the issues, the big elephant in our national living room, which is race, gun laws, profiling, and social media, the social media wild card. Let's talk about that. I'd love you to join us live. I know we get a lot more on-demand listeners and live listeners, but I hope you can be with us because I'd love to have your comments. If you can't be with us, by all means, send us your comments and questions in advance via the website or at Twitter, AB Writes. You can also tweet during the show. But if you could interact with us during the show and let me know how you have, you know, want to get your pulse, where you're feeling, that would be great. We're also going to talk, timely enough, with this young woman who's a filmmaker who is in the process of making a movie about called Muted. It's a short film. With the impetus of this came about because when young children go missing, who are the high-profile names you think about? Kaylee Anthony, Eitan Pates, Natalie Holloway, this young baby Elena they're talking about now who's missing. They're all white children. When black children of color go missing, you can't think of a name, can you? Because they get the short shrift. They don't get that much coverage, if any. So we'll talk about that, too, the whole way the race plays into the media coverage of certain cases. And the Zimmerman case, very important topics. We'll be talking about that throughout the summer, I'm sure. But let's try to keep our heads together on this one because it could be a really tight, tough case. I'm worried about the reaction that people are going to have, so I want to help. I don't want to ramp it up so much. I know we're talking about it, and I wonder if even talking about it at all ramps it up. But I want to kind of not dampen it down. People have a right to talk about it, but just try to put things in perspective and keep an open mind and let the case unfold and play out as it will in the courts and kind of hold your judgment. And it's kind of hard to do because we all have quick trigger Twitter fingers, as they say. I know. I understand. I get it. But let's try to keep our head, as they say. You know, as I mentioned earlier, I was really very saddened to hear about the loss of James Gandolfini, the actor who immortalized Tony Soprano, changed the face of cable TV and the way we look at heroes or anti-heroes. So let's go with a little tribute for him.
He wasn't in touch with his feelings. He just did what he had to do. So what they didn't know was once they got Gary Cooper in touch with his feelings, that they wouldn't be able to shut him up. And then it's dysfunction this, and dysfunction that, and dysfunction my fungal. Mother of Christ, is this a woman thing? You ask me how I'm feeling. I tell you how I'm feeling. And now you're going to torture me with it.
Oh, yeah, the Sopranos theme. You can just see it, right? Visualize it. Remembering James Gandolfini, who died suddenly at the age of 51 in Rome on Wednesday. Wow, what a shock it was. And all the outpouring of love and support from all his colleagues who had worked with him on The Sopranos and other projects came out. Apparently a very big-hearted man who really was a consummate theater person initially. He really was an actor's actor, had no intention or belief he would become a star, and was kind of humbled by the whole thing and surprised by it, I think, to the end. And there were great stories of his generosity on camera and off and on stage and off. I never got to see him on stage. I understand he was wonderful in God of Carnage, which later became the movie Carnage. Not so great, the film adaptation, I have to say, with John C. Reilly taking his role. But he was apparently a very good, formidable theater actor, and certainly a good actor. You know, he was typecast as Tony Soprano, and I think it bothered him a little bit, but he tried to break out. He had a couple of many supporting roles before and after his role in The Sopranos, very often playing hitman types and that kind of thing. And Mexican, he played a gay hitman. True Romance, I guess, was his breakout role also, in the role of a tough guy. But he had some other parts. He broke out in Cinema Verite. He played the guy who was the father of reality TV, essentially, the documentary filmmaker who brought American Family to PBS. And he had one role, which I don't think you've seen, because it's a very small indie that came out a couple of years ago. It got very little play, of course, in the big theaters. But because of DVD market, you can certainly get it on DVD. And I'm recommending it. It's my DVD pick of the week. It's a movie called Welcome to the Rileys. And I'm going to post on my Radio Graffiti blog the trailer. It's a beautiful little movie. He starred in with Melissa Leo about two grieving parents who lost their daughter to an accident and how they both cope with it. And it just shows a different side of him, the vulnerability, which he did have in Tony, which was what made Tony likable enough as an anti-hero. But it's certainly a different role and something which it just shows a range that a lot of people didn't know he had, I think. And who knows, in what could have been another 20, 25 years of a career, he could have demonstrated. So he certainly will be missed. A generous spirit, a great talent, James Gandolfini. Rest in peace. And if you have a chance, do yourself a favor and see that movie, Welcome to the Rileys. That's my DVD pick of the week. My TV pick of the week, besides the Arias movie, which I know I'm watching, it's going to be on Lifetime. Check your local listings. They repeat it forever. It has got to be Mad Men. It's the finale. If you've been following this show, this is the penultimate season. Next year they're supposedly wrapping it up, and I'm not sure how they're going to do it, but I know Don Draper, the main character, has been on this lengthy existential journey crisis for all these seasons, but he's got some people who've joined him this season. Pete Campbell going off the deep end with his wife leaving him, his mother going in and out of reality. Peggy Olson, she has her new big job, but she may or may not be falling in love with her new boss, Ted. She stabbed her boyfriend inadvertently, and he broke up with her in the ambulance. I mean, it's just all kinds of things. Poor Rogers in the mix, Joan. I mean, they're all coming apart at the seams in such an interesting way. I think this is one of the best seasons. It started out really good. They had a couple of uneven seasons. It was the what I call the bad Blankenship karma, when Wiener bumped off the quirky secretary, Miss Blankenship, and after that he had a kind of a shaky season or two. But here we are wrapping things up next season. We'll see what happens. There was a hint for those who watched it from the beginning. You know, Peggy and Pete got together in the first season and created something which nobody talks about except Pete's mother mentioned it, or should I say him or her. They have a kid out there somewhere who must be 8 or 10 by now, so I wonder if that's going to come to the fore next season. We'll find out. But that's on this Sunday. I've got to watch it. I hope if you're watching it, you will. And just for kicks, I don't know, it's Sarah Palin and Melissa Rivers in Celebrity Wife Swap. How they're going to do that, I don't know, because Melissa Rivers is not even married. But they're doing it on ABC on Sunday. Maybe Joan is going to be the husband. Sarah gets to go to California and hang out with Joan and Melissa's son. I don't know. It may be worth watching, at least for part of it. I guess Sarah Palin has cashed in her chips officially. She's not going to be taken seriously as a politician. Hey, have yourself a great weekend, whatever you do, wherever you go. Do drive safe, play nice, dream big, come back Monday. We'll talk at noon on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show.
good. What else is on?
Related to the comment, it's a different question than the one I want to make after my comment, but it may affect the question that I want to ask after my comment. All right, here's the question. This is the one before the comment, not after the... Okay, oh, shoot, I lost my train of thought.
Sleepy lives in a very bad place. No. I'm overdue. I'm really in a stew. No time to say goodbye. Hello, I'm late.
Politics, nothing is new. A yardstick for lunatics, one is